this is Katrina, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. This is part two with Lexi Pellegrino and Kara Evans and me, Katrina Chester, with Zooming in the Lens podcast. We're talking about awareness and shifting our perception from needing to know what we want to do to going to college. And we last looked at the 2015 statistic on the Daily Caller that reported that 86% of people, so that's 5 out of every 6 that graduate from college, have no clue in the way of career prospects post-campus life, and that the average loan is $35,000 to $50,000 that we owe after we've graduated. And we're not discussing whether or not to go to college. Education is hugely important. We're just hearing one person's perspective, Lexi's in particular, of going to college and then leaving college and not knowing what to do, trying the workforce, and then seeking out alternative experiences within the states and outside of the states. So let's tune in and hear where she went once she tried working in the field that she studied in college, what her major was, communications and radio, and she reported that most of the time she was falling asleep at her desk, so she knew that was sort of an awakening for her to seek out other things. Let's see what happens there.
I was living with you, and you handed me a magazine cutout of, well, a precursor to this was when I graduated, or when I was in, when I was a kid. We broke a wishbone on Thanksgiving.
You and I?
You and I. And we so you got the part that you make the wish with, right?
Okay.
Because one, yeah. And we made the wish, and we wrote it down on a little piece of paper that said, when you're done with high school, you're going to travel. I wish that you could travel Europe, or backpack Europe, or travel the world or something. So I always kind of grew up with this idea in the back of my head of like, oh yeah, I'm destined to travel one day.
Wow.
It's something that should definitely happen. But always thinking, how the fuck am I supposed to do that? I have no money. I'm like a little white woman. Like,
right.
It's unsafe. It's scary. It's like other people do that who are like handed it, or they get scholarships, or
right.
You know, shit like that. I never thought it would really be me.
Lexi, you said that just now or before about the people or the experiences that teach you, and you have to be open to it. But you also have to, just to circle back to how you started the whole podcast, is awareness.
Yeah,
you
right.
have to be aware that you are learning something.
Right.
You have to be aware that there is a teacher present, and if you're not, it may come to you 5, 7, 10 years later that was a teaching
right.
moment for you then.
Absolutely.
And
well,
it just has
yeah.
to catch up with you. So
right.
the experience you gained in your 4 years of school, what you were learning, you might have been learning music and communications and digital radio and all the things you were learning, but you were learning so much more.
Yeah.
About yourself.
And I was meeting people who I had up until that point thought, oh, those are the kind of people who do those things.
Mm-hmm.
And I was meeting them and realizing they're more like me than I had ever thought. And yeah, so along that path, that in the moment you're like, what am I doing? Why am I here? This is not for me. I don't belong here. Things are happening that you're probably not even aware of. That seed is being planted. Totally. So I ended up looking at that magazine cutout that you gave me and being like, there's all types of things listed. As far as volunteering, internationally, working on a farm in Massachusetts or somewhere in the States. So things you could do all over, obtainable for someone like me. I had money left over from student loans, which I know I'm part of that statistic,
right?
The people who owe a bunch of money. That's an uncomfortable feeling,
yeah,
for sure. But it sent me to Africa. So I just picked one on this list that you handed to me. And I was holding on to that list for 3 months, looking at it like, you know, could I do this? I'm working at a coffee shop in Santa Monica.
Right.
Like, not knowing what I'm doing. Just out of college.
It was a pivotal 3 months that you lived with me.
Absolutely.
It was intense practice. And
it was. It was tough.
Yeah, but you really, yeah, that seed started to already, I saw the stem, you know, coming out. And, you know, I also want to say from this heart that I have now, I think it's really ballsy of me to have said to you as a child, one day you'll travel the world. Because, you know, Ram Dass always talks about the spacesuit. It's not always just that we gather the good things, the bad things from our parents. Like, they want you to be happy, and I want you to be... But here I am putting it on you that you should travel, and it did work out for you. But at the same time, that was my story. Mm. That was my story and my wish for you. I look at that now and I say, I shouldn't have really put that on you. I should have just said, I wish for you to do whatever it is you want to do.
So she said, stay with her. What if it didn't? What if it never happened? Would she feel like a failure?
Well, I would. Yeah, I mean, who knows? But if I didn't give her that thought, if a parent doesn't say to a child, I just want you to be happy, and then their whole life is not happy, and then they walk around feeling shitty about not being happy, that's as bad as not going to college and everybody telling you you should have. Mm-hmm. So, I just want to say that.
Did you remember that you made that wish for her on the wishbone on Thanksgiving when she was little?
Not that particular story, but I do know that I did put on her, you have to get out of your hometown. You have to leave here and get out of the States because there's a whole world. And not that this country doesn't need us. It was never about that. It was the same thing that I study now, which is awareness. I can't see when I believe that I am who I am. I can't see my thoughts when I'm very busy thinking them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's the same thing about traveling to another country. You're catapulted into different culture and not knowing, the don't know mind. And you have to, there is a bit of, you have to surrender. You can't go in there. You can, unfortunately, I think some Americans do. But you shouldn't be walking in there going, I know everything, and I know exactly what I'll do and where I'll go, because you're just not open to experiencing anything. You're just going to make a little America overseas for yourself, a little, which people touring do all the time. They travel around in a bus, American rock acts that I know that are friends of mine, and they just make an American world in their tour bus, and they just get out to do the show and get back in. They'd have never tasted, you know, the real, authentic, even though I'm not liking that word lately, the being that is that country. So I still feel that way. It's just it's not my business, and it's not my right to feel that everybody should do that. You do that if you feel that that's what you should do. So then you saw this elephant, Africa. And what made you take the actual plunge?
Honestly, it was the cheapest one.
Great. That's what we want. We want honesty.
It was the cheapest one.
Did they pay you?
It was the first one on the list. So I initially, it was like around $4,000 that I had from my student loans left over. The most expensive thing was the flight. It was about $2,000, and I just took the rest, and the project was $1,000. For me to go work with them.
Right.
which is, it's kind of expensive still. I was lucky to have had that money and to be willing to just use all of it to experience something different.
And maybe if you would have saved it for your 401k, you would...
Or maybe if I just gave it back, I would owe $4,000 less.
Right.
But it was worth it.
Yeah.
I think not only that wishbone thing, but the fact that I was falling asleep at my computer every day at this internship.
Metaphorically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Oh my God, in every way. In every way.
If you're not falling asleep, then great. But if you are falling asleep, yeah, you might want to look at that now while you're still able. Yeah. So then you go to Africa. Wow. Just culture shock. You were scared. Mm-hmm. Sitting at the table with me, going over, like, what do I do about changing planes? And I would rather it be nonstop. And where do I change the money? And what's Namibian money? And
being in the Johannesburg airport, which is the largest, scariest airport, I'm convinced, in the world. I was so scared. And then I get to this bus stop where the organization I was working with was supposed to set me up with a shuttle that was going to pick me up like 20 minutes after I got there. And 2 hours later, I'm sitting in the capital of Namibia with like two suitcases, or, you know, one big suitcase and a backpack. And I'm sitting on the street corner.
Yeah.
And all these like African people are just walking by and like talking in a different language. And I was just sitting there for like 2 hours, so scared that the bus was never going to show up. I didn't have a phone. I couldn't call them.
Good for you that you stayed there.
I had nowhere else to go.
But I guess you didn't really have a choice.
I had nowhere else. I had no idea where I was. I was in the middle of Africa with...
Wow.
Yeah. With
that's a really nothing. Great place to see yourself with that fear of the unknown and the story that you take with you. That's amazing that you did that.
And she's really, not even like that. You know what I mean? Like, I wasn't like
if
that.
If you told me like 3 months before that happened, that was going to happen, I would have never went.
Of course. Of course. And you don't think you were like that, but she didn't think she was like that either.
That's my point, and I think that's what awareness into maybe all of us saying, I know we were all brought up to say, I know exactly who I am.
Yeah.
I know who I am, and I know what I want. You can both feel that way and underneath cultivate the witness that knows that life truly isn't about knowing who you are, because once you know, there's nowhere to go.
Or once you think you know.
Exactly.
Because I don't think it's ever really true. I think it's always changing.
Of course, of course. And even when you don't think you're changing, you're changing.
Right, exactly.
Right. So, just take us through that perception of that you were simultaneously having both. You were both in Africa doing something you've never done before, scared, but still taking action. And that is what the Gita talks about, skillful action, doing what is present right now, is that you were in Africa, you had no experience doing it, but there you were. And you kept that up for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You kept the, you know, going into the bush and tracking elephants and helping rebuild these wells.
Yeah.
And I feel that it's a really important lesson for us all and for me to hear again, that waiting for the mind to say, I'm ready, I'm prepared, I know what I want. You don't have to do that, do you?
No, and there might not be one clear-cut thing that gives you that thought. You might never have that thought.
Right.
Right?
Because you didn't really have that thought sitting at that table. You never went,
no,
all right.
No, I was so scared. I had no idea what I was doing. I don't know what made me think that going to Africa for my first time traveling abroad was a great idea. It was, definitely. But at that moment...
Right.
Oh, man, I had no idea.
There's so many things like that in an average day.
Oh, every day.
Every day there's things that...
There could be something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't even need for us to go overseas if Africa isn't the thing for somebody.
Or... It doesn't have to be anything like that. It could be your next door neighbor's house.
That's right.
And the same thing could happen.
Yeah.
After I did Africa, I came back and I wanted to continue along those lines. I wanted to keep doing things that... scared me, that I wanted to find comfort in how uncomfortable it was.
You got it.
So that's I joined a program called AmeriCorps.
Didn't you go back to Africa for a second time first?
I did, actually. So I went initially for 2 weeks, which was the volunteer period. And then they were looking for an assistant to come back to work with the project manager. And then they actually paid me a little bit of money.
Right.
So I went back... Which is, like, thinking about it now, I'm like, how did I manage that?
Right.
I must have really loved it the first time.
Well, it wasn't really the mind's job at that point. At that point, you were operating.
It was like autopilot.
Yeah. Well, and autopilot with being in the now, it's not like you didn't prepare. You can be both. It is a simultaneous thing. You're getting your passport ready.
Yeah.
You're getting your money ready. And at the same time... fear is present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
It's just which we're going to attune to that we're going to allow to be the master and what part of us is going to be the slave.
Well, and in a sense, the second time was even scarier because I was there for 6 weeks.
Right.
So I was there a lot longer.
Right.
I was working for them, so I had a lot more responsibility.
Right.
But it was incredible.
Right. And then you got back from that.
And yeah, so I got back from that, and I had been there all together with a break in between for 2 months.
Mm.
And those 2 months, I think, really changed everything for me. I realized that I didn't want to be falling asleep at a computer in New York City ever again. And that's when I looked into AmeriCorps, and I was recommended by some friends to do, like, Peace Corps and... That still seemed a little too much for me. Like, I still was not that person.
Isn't that funny?
Other people do Peace Corps.
Right.
I'm still that. Like,
yeah.
Well, okay, I'm not doing Peace Corps.
And the key of it is your laughter. Because after a while, we start to see our hang-ups and we don't take them so personally.
Right.
And then that helps with the whole defensive parts of us that, like, well, you can do that, but I'm not doing that. And that's right for you. And we tend to all get really defensive. But, I mean, the best thing about this journey for me is the sense of humor.
Right.
That you develop.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
I agree.
So I found AmeriCorps.
Right.
Which is a great program that is here in the States. It's amazing. It helps you... to see a lot of that.
What exactly is AmeriCorps?
It's kind of defined as the Domestic Peace Corps. They have a bunch of different branches of programs that are involved, but it's basically you're doing national community service, but you're getting paid for it. Not a lot. I mean, I basically get paid poverty level wages.
Mm-hmm.
You get assistance with student loan forbearance. And it's also a really excellent alumni network. They do a lot of job connections. There's a lot more employers who are looking for the qualities that AmeriCorps instills in 18 to 25-year-olds typically in their businesses. So it's definitely a really excellent way to get your foot in the door with certain types of, like, humanitarian work.
Like what? Give us an example of something somebody could do.
I know they work a lot with Habitat for Humanity, which is basically you're building homes for families who are low income or have been displaced from their homes for various reasons.
And they put
They put you up. Well, in the program I did, which is NCCC, NCCC, National Corporation of Community, I don't know, something along those lines. And it's a 10-month residential program for 18 to 25-year-olds.
Wow.
They have one branch that's called traditional, which does work such as trail work, tree planting, community outreach and sort of like in areas of cities that are sort of under like low socioeconomic status. They help do like park rebuilding and revamping and things along those lines. That's not the one I did, so I don't know as much about it.
Right.
I did the other branch of NCCC, which is called FEMA Corps. So we're working with FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management Agency. So I did 10 months of disaster mitigation, management, recovery. And I actually, so, and this is my point, tying back to the thing I did in Africa, which was Africa. It's another country. It's a crazy place, you know, to conceptualize. And my point is that it doesn't have to be Africa. So my first 3 months of my FEMA Corps experience, I was working in New York on Long Island.
Wow.
Where my house is like an hour away.
Right.
And I'm helping people to shovel sand out of their house because they're living in the Hamptons and, Hurricane Sandy is the disaster I was working. So, crazy storm, you know? People's homes are completely destroyed.
Yes, yes.
And I got to see that literally, like, basically in my backyard.
How did that further your awareness? Like, what did that do for you, seeing all that and being a part of it?
Well, at first I was really upset. I was like, I joined this program so I could see the country. I wanted to see another state. You know, I want to be doing more for people that, you know, live in other places, basically. And it helped me develop the awareness that it doesn't have to be in any specific place. Because we can all use a hand, really.
Yeah.
And it helped me have the awareness that that satisfaction and that fulfillment, in a way, could happen at the gas station. It doesn't have to be some extravagant African safari adventure to mean something.
You think you would still fall asleep at your desktop with that kind of awareness?
That's a good question.
I think that's what we all ask ourselves about everything as you're on this journey. Is like, what if I mean, not to go backwards, but just to think to yourself, there are some jobs, some things in life that just don't inspire us to ask questions, to find self-discovery, and that's not everybody's journey either. But it's also okay. You know, we're all okay if you don't love your job and it's not saving the world.
Right.
Like, we all need everything that's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything doesn't have to be this big, giant example.
Yeah.
But I think you're right in that one profound thing you said to me was that doing what you're doing, because you went on and I'll let you, you know, get us to the current place of where you're at, but it's not, a lot of people look at it as selfless service, but that comes so loaded with expectations and very separate, like those are the things other people do, selfless service. And the biggest service we all need is to learn how to help ourselves, which is what I think being your aunt, I've seen in you is the development of self-love and the development of self-acceptance. And technically you were out there taking care of elephants, taking care of tribes, their water, not your water, their water.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, from the ego mind, that's what the ego mind's saying, helping people with Sandy. So it seems like it's selfless service. But again, it's the combination that you can use service like you can use a desk job, a teaching job, pumping gas, being a lawyer. You said to me, it's not about what I'm doing, it's about the me and who I am doing it.
Right.
And that goes back to that thing I always say where Katrina 2, Lexi 2 is our personalities and the things we like. It's encompassing a lot of what we sometimes may believe is our truth, because the ego is alluring and we need it. It's a fantastic tool. The one, Alexa one, Katrina one, is that, let's say heart, you could say God, you could say Buddha nature, you could just say true self. It's that part of you that's always been with us, that you can remember being 4 and 5 and 6 years old. The outside's changed, the mind has changed, perception's changed, because all of that is changing, but there's this voice that sounds very familiar to that voice we've always carried around with us. And if we go even into deeper into selfless service, where there's no money to be made and you literally are just living to help other people, if we're doing that from our two, it's a different texture. It's a different feeling. It's more about feeling good about ourselves because we're helping. Having a lot of expectations because we're helping. I do believe there's a balance between the one and two. And you're going into, I think what I've seen in you is the development over these 5 to 6 years of understanding the importance of you working on you so that you can be there for others or for animals or for rescue efforts. Mm-hmm. Because without our sense of self, not knowing the self, that's very different. But the sense of grounded within yourself, to have that inner awareness, that inner dialogue of, we're both special and not special. We're both just doing this, and it's also serving me. And not feeling guilty about things serving us. We've gotten such a stigma on that.
Right.
You know, like selfless service has to be nothing. Don't even give yourself any credit.
Yeah.
You know, so I feel that you saying who you bring into that is the same thing for those that are doing jobs that they don't like. The mind has decided, I hate this job. So absolutely, you're going to walk in there every day with your two blaring,
mm-hmm.
I hate this job. I hate this job. If you say, well, Katrina and Lexi, I can't find anything good about this because there just isn't, and I hate what I'm doing. And I would say that that's the same mind that told you that you could not go to Africa.
Right.
And so we listen to that mind, and we might just stand still, thinking about the past of what we used to be or thought life would be, or the future, where we're doing something only for the future. But there can be this beautiful balance in between it, which I'm watching you sort of develop as you're going. And that's the really enlightening part, is that I know where you started, and you started like all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that the perception is, I knew what I wanted to do. I don't even know if it was a knowing. I don't think people that know what they want to do are necessarily luckier. I mean, we did this podcast, Sass and I, like,
right.
What did I call that?
What do you want to do? What the fuck?
Yeah, or WTF, what are you, yeah, right.
Something.
Yeah, doing what you love.
Right.
Which is better. And I still stand that there is no better. There is no right and wrong. It's what is, and it's who you are doing it. And so then from there, Lex, you went to do what?
When I completed AmeriCorps.
Yeah, FEMA.
When I completed FEMA, I didn't know what I was going to do.
So maybe this is a reoccurring thing for all of us?
Maybe it is.
Right.
I went and I lived with family, and I was, I actually was really struggling in my own mind, and really confused and really lost, and turned on to this new idea of conservation work, but didn't know where that would get me or what step I could take to find, like, develop a career from that. I didn't think it was something that I would do.
Yeah.
Or I could do.
Right.
And I still struggle with the fact that I have this degree in something that I'm not doing. That still gets me. I get stuck on that all the time.
Right.
And so I was in that mindset, just working another part-time job, and got an email one night about a program called the Backcountry Trail Program with the California Conservation Corps. And at this point, I was 24, I think. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm 24. Like, I'm almost a quarter of a century old. What am I doing with my life? I graduated college 2 years ago. I should have a steady job by now. I should be living in my own apartment. I should, whatever. I didn't, so I had to, you know, just live with that. And this program was with the California Conservation Corps. So I called them, I told them my situation, asked them if I qualified, and they were like, you could totally do this. You should apply. So I brought the job description to you. I was living with you again. And I remember specifically just showing it to you and saying, I'm going to do this. Like, just assuming I would get accepted. Very presumptuous. I did get accepted. And I went and I lived in the Shasta Trinity Wilderness in Northern California for 6 months.
Oof.
Building trail, camping, living on a crew. Yeah, a bunch of people who had been doing that work, a bunch of kids who had no idea what they wanted to do with their lives.
A lot more out there than we think.
Yeah. There was 17 of us.
Wow.
From 18 to 24.
Do you remember one of your journal entries from that time?
One of my journal entries from that time? Well, I mean, my journal entries were all over the place out there. I had a lot of time to think. I remember being really down a lot of the time that I was there because I didn't know what I was doing.
Do we ever know what we're doing?
I remember being really frustrated that I couldn't understand how to build trail or build walls out of rock, which ironically was the same thing I was doing in Africa.
Right.
It was weird. It was stressful to be that dirty.
Right.
Hard to communicate with my bosses in a predominantly male, masculine field.
Mm-hmm.
As a woman. I don't remember my journal entries. Mm.
Sometimes you would write me letters by donkey, remember?
Right, well, that's how we got our mail and our food. Every right. Monday we had a mule pack string come and bring us all of our supplies.
And I remember getting some of the letters of, like, I'm wet, I'm cold.
I have no idea when you'll get this letter.
I don't even know which way is up. Don't send me any food because bears will come. And I can't put anything more on my pack. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, never knowing if... But every letter ended with, this is great.
Yeah.
So, again, simultaneous.
Right. I was, like, miserable but so happy at the same right. time for the whole experience.
Yeah. I think maybe if we get off the ride that says everything's supposed to be great and happy.
Right.
And we just embrace both of those things, not willing sadness or being freezing or, you know, any of those things to us. But when they arrive, being able to have the tools, you would never have been, if I put this on paper 10 years ago and said, this is what you were going to do,
mm-hmm.
in our TV raised culture,
oh,
and our external,
so
yeah, we all would have laughed so hard. Right. And I would have laughed so hard when I was 17, 16, thinking about if somebody would have told me I was going to be on stage traveling the world and be doing what I'm doing now. Sure, prepare, right? What's that saying? Prepare and this is your surefire way to get God to laugh, or I'm quoting it horribly, but there is preparation and then there's actually living life.
Mm-hmm.
Then you went on to do what?
Okay, when I finished that, what did I do? I was at another part-time job living at my mom's house, not sure what the hell I was going to do.
Right.
No, that's not true.
That's not true. No, you came back here.
Okay, so, well, I met someone in the backcountry, and we ended up moving to Humboldt County together,
which is where
in Northern California. And we stayed there doing that work for a little bit.
Right. So there was another group out there. Like,
right.
Wow, this whole world has opened up now.
And now I'm living in California in my own apartment.
In Humboldt County.
In
right?
Humboldt County. And we're doing this thing. And we stayed with the California Conservation Corps. And there I met the boss that I was talking about, who told me to stick with that job because right. I can get insurance and a retirement plan.
Right. Okay, that story from the beginning.
And he was an excellent supervisor. He taught me a lot. He actually, at that point, my plan was to go to massage school
right.
after.
Right.
In like 3 months or something, I was going to go. And I had a big conversation with him about how can I, like, feel comfortable with that, knowing that I've spent all this time doing conservation work and being in Africa, and I've gotten so far from my degree, but now I want to do something far away from everything mm-hmm. again, and just feeling like I had no consistency with my path, worrying that that could be another dead end that wouldn't get me anywhere.
Right.
And he actually pointed out to me that it all had a central theme of healing, how the communication work I was doing was healing my self-confidence to talk on the radio, and then how my Africa work was healing the farmers of the bush and the elephants, and how my work in AmeriCorps was healing the people who had this stuff happened to them in these natural disasters. And then how trail work is healing the earth and pulling invasive species is healing these very sensitive ecosystems in the rainforest and in the wilderness. And then how massage would be healing people through touch and movement. So it was like this aha moment for me of, I can switch, I can change my desires, and I can follow these things that are fulfilling for me on a surface level, but also on a spiritual level, and it can make sense.
Yeah.
And that gave me a little confidence boost of like, wow, you know, it doesn't have to be so obviously linear or consecutive.
Shift of perception, right?
It shifted my perception.
I need to hear that. I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that need to hear that there's probably a central theme.
It was almost like him telling me, like, it's okay. Everything you're doing is okay. You don't need to stress so much. There is a fine line between being in the now and
right.
having responsibility.
Yeah.
So for me, everything I had been doing was being in the now for me. And I think I was worried about no longer having this responsibility over my own life.
It's a balance everybody has to cultivate on their own.
Right.
There is no recipe.
Right.
I mean, read the Bhagavad Gita, as you have.
Mm-hmm.
That is the closest thing to how to live spiritually with the current world that you're in.
Yeah.
And I think it's a really important point you're bringing up of there being a central theme in whatever work we do, to look outside of just the linear perspective, that what you're doing is probably way bigger than just your job title.
Right.
And that is really great, to get that permission that what you're doing is okay. You're okay. You're okay. If you have tons of money and you want to start a 401k and you want to do all that and you can, great. But how is it serving all of us to be freaking out about it when we don't have that option?
It's not.
And to go and take a job just because of that
right.
doesn't seem very present. Although if you're doing it, shifting the awareness to find what your central theme is. What did you used to do as a child that you loved, and what are you doing now? maybe there is a central theme. That's why having a satsang or a community or one person or a neighbor or somebody that you can speak to that can help you run some of these storylines that are in your head.
I really needed him to point that out for me.
It's really profound, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't find that on my own.
Right.
But it was like almost right there in front of my face.
It's the secret hidden in plain sight. I always feel that way about even just the way we look at anything, the way we look at designing our house, the way we put on makeup or our shoes. Witness all the different ways in which you could do anything, not because the putting on your shoes different is going to solve world hunger, but because putting your shoes on differently or eating with your left hand instead of your right or your right instead of your left, it starts to cultivate that there is a world outside of just the neural pathways we've created.
Right.
Change. What you did was you went into the scary parts. And a lot of power of positive thinking will say, don't do that because, I mean, not they're not saying don't go into the scary parts, but in regards to emotions, don't even power up fear. Don't even think about fear. And I've just not had a lot of success with that thinking.
Yeah.
But it's a titration, so it's a dialing in. Can somebody take on their greatest fear right away? Probably not. But should you just all of a sudden listen to this podcast and hang up and just fly to Africa?
No.
There's something called skillful action, right? And you have people around you, hopefully. If not, if you're a religious person, I'm sure you have a rabbi or a priest or a scholar or anybody that is somebody you feel you can trust to give you an honest opinion of there not being a right and wrong. It's just getting information, right?
Yeah.
And somebody once said that to me when I was thinking of moving to California. They said, don't look at it as a permanent move. Look at it as you're gathering more information.
Right.
And
oh my God.
I've kept that with me forever.
That's basically what it all comes down to.
That's what life is, gathering more information.
I think everything we do, everything we sign ourselves up for, we take very, not only very seriously, but like as if it's permanent.
Yeah, when you're feeling pain, you feel like it's never going to go away.
Right.
Yes, I agree with you that I think that does cause a lot of our suffering is the grasping onto the permanence that it could be.
Right.
And having that freedom of saying I'm gathering more information is what I took into my spiritual journey, that I'm gathering more information about me. And unless I started this podcast, I wouldn't know what Katrina shows up in the podcast, what Katrina listens back to the podcast. It's not so important that I have a fixed version of what Katrina is podcast Katrina. It's more that as I cultivate the witness, which is really just a pure awareness without the storyline, without judging myself, without worrying too much about the end result, just being in the now, I can watch my Katrina 2 taking the steps that I need to take in order to get there, in order to make that a reality.
Right.
And so then the last thing you did was...
So when I left Humboldt County, I decided at that point that I wanted to learn how to farm. So I went and I lived in Hawaii for 3 months and literally went with like $400 to
my
name.
How did you do that? Because I think people would be really interested about this.
Okay, it's a website called workaway.info.
So it's W-O-R-K.
Yes.
A-W-A-Y.
One word.
Dot
together.
Com.
Dot info.
Oh, dot info.
Not dot com.
Workaway.info.
And it's basically a program that hooks you up with a work trade in any country.
Any age?
Any age. You set up like a pro... You have to pay. I believe it's $30 or so for one person. I did it as a couple with my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, I don't remember how much it was for us, maybe $40 or something. And for a year.
So the membership on the website.
Yeah, exactly. You sign up for the year to have this profile, to reach out to people, hosts, and they can reach out to you and invite you. I was invited to like Italy, Germany, Australia, France,
wow,
Spain. I mean, obviously I couldn't afford to go any of those places, but we went to Hawaii. That's where we ended up going.
Right.
He didn't have a passport. But not a bad place to be.
No, not at all. So you went there and you basically lived on this farm. So these people house you. It's maybe even if somebody just needs help with their local business, they can
hire
people.
That's the thing. There's a website called Woofing, W-O-O-F-F. It stands for Worldwide. So it's WW, Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. So W-W-O-O-F.
Okay.
That is strictly farming.
I see.
Same concept. You pay monthly or you pay yearly for a membership. You could go international. You could stay in the States. Work away is a little bit different because you can do other tasks like babysitting or painting a house or building a house or mowing someone's lawn, but also kind of primarily farming.
Okay. And so what you're saying, though, is that you need the money for the flight. They house you.
Right.
They feed you?
Sometimes.
Okay. They possibly will feed you, but they're housing you.
Yes.
And you're actually working, and they're paying you.
No.
They're not paying you.
You do not get paid.
Okay.
That's the catch.
Right.
So it's a work trade.
It's a work trade. So to just be in that area, maybe if you wanted to go visit a country,
yeah,
you do it. And then maybe on the days that you have off, if you do part-time or whatever,
yep,
you can scout out the area for a job that you want to do,
right,
to keep you there when that work for hire is over.
Right. It's usually about 20 to 30 hours per week. Sometimes they have a set schedule. Sometimes it's 15 hours a week. I mean, it all depends on the situation. Everyone kind of has something a little bit different that they offer.
And you go on that website and you build yourself a profile page.
Yep. You That's put a picture really cool. up, you talk about what you've done, where you're interested, you can pick where you want to go.
Right.
Yeah, and a lot of places will have animals that you take care of, so that was, like, my main interest was, like, animal husbandry, I think it's called, and homesteading in general.
You know, and out of it, Lexi, I just want to ask you if you feel like you... Do you feel like at any moment you could just step back into the cultural norm of everyday work life, and you could do that? It's not that that's disappeared for you. It's not like they said you'll never allowed back because you didn't do it right away. Nobody's saying that to you.
No, in fact, a lot of the places that it would be more of like you're talking about like having a desk job, basically.
Yeah, like you typical, can go back if
right. A lot of places look for these things. A lot of places really value the experiences I've had, and keep having.
You mean desk jobs value
right.
what you're doing now?
Right.
I see. So maybe you've actually made yourself more marketable
right.
in the workplace.
Right. Depending on what I want to do.
Right.
Definitely. I don't know. If I went back to radio, they might be like, what the hell have you been doing?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have been so far away from this for so long, we don't want you. I mean, I don't know.
Sure, I guess that could be.
But yeah, I think the experience, it's almost like in lieu of an internship or field experience or just general life experience.
And I also want to say, like, too, that I don't think you have to be interested in permaculture or building trails to go and do something like this, because there's an element that we're not as in touch with as a culture, and that is nature.
Oh, God, yeah. I didn't know anything about trails when I did that first trail program.
Right.
I mean, that's what was so scary. Well, one of the things that was so
that
scary.
You had no goal.
I had never been camping.
Right.
And I lived in the backcountry for 6 months. Like,
right.
I had no... I mean, I liked being outdoors. I knew that. That was my motivation.
Yeah.
But I had no knowledge to go from of what it would be like or if I would like it, even.
Well, I think that's... reconnecting it back to you go to school, you take a major, and then this statistic that we had read at the beginning says this amount of people. What is it? 86%. 86% in 2015. Don't have a clue.
That's so much
in the way of their career
That's
prospects.
Very
high post-campus.
Oh my
life.
God.
So
it's all of us. We're all in it together.
Yeah, well,
basically.
Of course. Absolutely.
That's
absolutely.
What I'm saying.
So if you're not 100% sure, you're not happy,
yeah,
it's not like you have to then take that career goal oriented, wanting the result person and go take a month, 6 weeks, a year, whatever it ends up being for you, a week. You don't have to take that person into that adventure of nature. Why are you doing this? You're not a nature conservation person. I'm doing this to get experience in nature, in living of myself, who shows up.
But you also, sorry to interrupt, but you also don't have to get rid of that either.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's a really, really poignant thing to say.
You can, you always just like have it with you.
Right.
Because I still have that with me.
Of course.
I want that. But you don't have to bring it, like you were saying, into everything you're doing and put all that pressure on yourself.
It's like when you go away on vacation and you say, I don't want to go home. I don't want to go back to the rat race. I wish I could be. And then you glorify the vacation spot and you down your home and your life.
Mm-hmm.
If you just, for the sake of creating some new neural pathways, think about life as that vacation spot, and widening your vision to not obsessing, as we all do, with doing something to get somewhere. The career is there. We're brought up to believe that it has to be full steam ahead. The minute you're out of college, I mean, what are they hitting up 10th graders now for what college they want to go to?
Oh.
Prep for college and SATs. And the further back we go, the further stress and anxiety and all sorts of stuff starts to come up for people.
Right.
But if you just, you can step off that wheel. You can step off the treadmill and get back on. And it doesn't have to look like vacation or have any of these things on it. It has to do with the you that you're bringing into everything. It matters. It will alter so many things in your life, marriage and kids and your perception of people and what the right weight should be for you and what the right look should be. Everything starts to be cultivated around the perceptions that we have.
Mm-hmm.
Step off and then step back on. You know, and if you didn't have anything else to say about this topic, I just wanted to, because we threw around the word awareness a lot before I ended, I wanted to read this. I found this guy's website. He doesn't really have any other name. Where is his name here? He doesn't have a name other than Sen, S-E-N, and I could even be pronouncing it wrong, but it's calmdownmind.com. I do not know a lot about this person at all, but what I read, I really, really liked. I'll first just read this paragraph that he wrote. If you're on this journey toward self-discovery, you are inevitably also on a journey toward a fearless expression, what I also call your nature expression unfolding. The mind immediately will associate something, quote-unquote, spiritual with these terms. Basically, because we always want to seem to associate this journey of self-discovery with some deluded notion of becoming unworldly. Most of us have a very screwed up idea about what spiritual even means. Though a good part of self-discovery is about understanding your nature as the spirit, life energy or stream of consciousness, that you are in essence, this understanding is then used to burn through all the hang-ups you have in your human nature, which you've created through holding on to fear-based limiting thoughts, and thus realize your authentic expression, each of us, is unique in our human nature. And so this discovery is very personal, and only you can explore this discovery in yourself. You can't trust anyone else, not even your intimate spouse or therapist of 10 years, with it, because only you can meet yourself 100%. No one else can do that for you. I really liked what he said there specifically. He said, the deal is that in order to discover yourself, you have to be willing to be fearless of what you discover and how your life will change with these discoveries. Of course, the more you discover yourself, the more aligned you feel and the more abundant your experience of life is. It's a fair warning that as you delve into this journey of self-discovery, which is everything, it doesn't have to mean India or Africa. Self-discovery is you at a day job. You will reach a point soon enough where you realize there is no U-turn. Basically, when you see a truth about yourself clear enough, you can't unknow. You can't unknow it again, ever. It becomes a point of no return. Of course, there is nothing more liberating than the truth, and you will discover that the more you simply go with your truth, the more interesting, enjoyable, and aligned your life becomes. So this is not a risk, rather. It's a path toward your freedom, towards the freedom, your being, heart, desires so much. Basically, there are two ways to live, he's saying. One is you trade your inner freedom or inner alignment for a sense of pseudo-security. Mm-hmm. Or two, you don't compromise on staying true to yourself. I don't totally agree with that. I think that that's making one be better than the other.
Right.
So I'd say,
I think there's a good balance.
Absolutely. I don't think you have to trade your inner freedom. I think if you're working with your two, it might seem like you're trading your inner freedom. But if you can look at your day job and find that, what you had said, that continual theme, that major theme, it doesn't have to be pseudo-security. You know, he goes on to say a lot, actually, so most people should just really go to it. But he says, as a body, you are a unique expression of life. There is no one like you in the whole universe. You are utterly and completely unique the way you are naturally. Unfortunately, very few people ever allow their natural expression to flower through. You're always trying to create templates and copy what others are doing. I, like most people, became quite unnatural in my childhood, and I started using my personal will to get things done, things that I was not interested in. I studied courses that did not interest me because my friends and teachers advised me so. I took up a job that did not interest me because of the paycheck it offered. I tried to change myself to fit the model, and it never felt right. Finally, with the realization of truth, it all came crashing down, and I just let go of trying to become and allowed life to guide me back to my natural state of being. This is a journey of a lifetime, and it's very dynamic because there is no personal control. It's just life expressing through the body the way it wants to.
I love that.
Don't you? Me too.
That's so good. It's entitled Becoming One with My True Nature.
Which is tying in the being with nature. So if you take 2 weeks off from work, or you take a week off and you go do something like you've done, it can inform your current situation, which seems impossible and trapped. Because what you're doing is you're taking yourself out of your element, maybe facing a fear, as long as you're not in any physical danger and you're not putting somebody else in physical danger, you're getting to the nature of the self. Who are you in that new environment?
Right.
And you're creating space, spiritual space for you to be able to view yourself when you come back. You have that option to just bring that information back into what feels like this never-ending hamster wheel of our life. You know, awareness, he describes as the light. Awareness is the light using which you identify using which you identify negativity and that's probably not the best one to read. How about this one? The attitude of allowing, which arises to arise fully, comes from a place of love, not from a place of fear or hatred. I like that line, because that is what we're using. But he had a great description of awareness that I can't seem to find right now before we
You know, it's been really interesting, like, now in my life, is that the more that I did focus on that sort of the realization of my truth and my true nature, whatever you want to call it, just kind of allowing these things to unfold,
yeah,
and going with them,
right.
And sort of like facing all those fears that I've had, is that now I'm at a place where I'm seeing a connection with everything I've done in my past and the place that I think I want to head now, and these opportunities are kind of just popping up for me. I'm now entering into like sort of environmental education, leading youth conservation groups. And I've just been offered a position where they're going to put me in school and pay for it for a full semester and then give me a job after. So, I mean, I have no degree. I have no education in this field. And yet I'm being offered this really amazing opportunity. So it's just interesting to me how sort of I'm finding myself following that path of what I think my truth could be. I mean, I don't even know, right? Mm-hmm. It just feels good. And these things are sort of happening in front of me.
And I don't even think that those things weren't happening in front of you before. I think that your awareness is allowing you to see them.
Sure. Yeah.
And that's what is so inspiring, is that no spiritual teacher, no teaching is the magic thing. It all lies inside of us, and shifting the perception and creating awareness, having discussions like these, all of a sudden, things that have probably been going on around us all along start to feel like they're coming at you, and they're opportunities that were not there before. And it's really incredible that, at least on my journey and many others that I've worked with, they were there the whole time and I just didn't see them. And it excites me at what else I'm not seeing.
Right. Also the perspective.
Yes.
The shifts in perception.
I think that's what's allowing a lot of those things to be seen.
Right.
And if I were to shortchange myself by creating a plan that I'm stuck to in stone,
mm-hmm.
I don't think those same things would appear. Different things would appear.
Right.
But I don't think those same things would appear. So that's what allowing is sure, create a rough outline. And then find yourself allowing that outline to come and go, come and go, come and go, rewrite it. Because life is, experience ends up informing you rather than a great idea from your career counselor or what we think we should be doing. And we can't always trust what feels right. Because as you had said, it depends what you is feeling it. He defines this, awareness is a process of honest discovery. The word honest is of essence here. If you don't have the courage to be honest within, you can't really know yourself. It's so easy to idolize personalities that we admire or feel in awe of, and it's not long before we start trying to emulate this person's way of being. If you truly want to grow in self-discovery, you have to be willing to stand alone without holding anyone, anything as a model for your life. As long as you stay a follower, you can never fully connect fully with yourself. It may seem easy to just stay a follower, and it's totally fine if that's what your present state of being is. But if you want to go on this journey of self-discovery, you can't hold on to the comfort of depending on the outside to tell you how to be. And what I see from that is, this is somebody who's saying, dive in head first. I don't really think that that's necessary for everybody. I think somebody reading that might say, yeah, okay, I'm going to dive right in. But for those of us that are taking baby steps, which I don't think are baby at all, they're big steps. It's just being willing to get honest with just ourselves. And awareness is that light that can shine that on us next time you lie. Recognize in your mind that it's a lie. just that even small thing. Because you could just tell a lie and tell a lie, and then you move to the next topic, and you'll just have the residue of feeling bad. Or not feeling bad, and then feeling bad you don't feel bad. Tell a lie, if you do, and say, there's a lie. And see what comes up for you after you've identified that as a lie. And I pick a lie because I read some statistic somewhere that there's not a soul on this planet that has ever not lied in some way, shape, or form, externally. So I think that that's a good tool. Do you have any recommendations for anybody of any age?
Yeah.
Can you
absolutely?
Can you tell us some before we go?
I mean, yeah, I have like specific job things that I could recommend you to go explore. I mean, if you're younger, if you're looking for a different path or something to do after college or after high school, I totally have those things. You can do AmeriCorps like I did. You could...
How would they go? Where would they go?
I mean, you could just do like a Google search and just type in AmeriCorps.
Okay.
There's a hotline that you could call. If you type in AmeriCorps hotline on Google, you could call them and literally just say, teach me everything about AmeriCorps.
Right.
And they'll tell it, because there's a lot of different programs that, for me, it was definitely confusing to figure out what was what and what they actually offered. So I'd recommend calling the hotline, finding out from them. They could tell you everything you need to know. If you're interested in outdoor environmental work, there are conservation corps in literally every state, and they are now being developed in a lot of places abroad. And there's a website called CoolWorks, I think it's .gov, that will, they do a lot of like resort work, but you can type in, you can search for all these different fields of like outdoor, just like kind of off the wall stuff that you can go do. And there's a lot of conservation corps on there. Or you can go to the CORE Network, and CORE is CORPS.
Okay.
It's not corpse, it's CORE. I don't know why, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go to the CORE Network. They have a website, and you can also check out the CORE Job Exchange. And they should be able to direct you to a conservation corps in whatever state you're looking in. There's also backdoorjobs.com. It's mainly environmental stuff, natural resources, sustainable practices, and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I would definitely, if you're still in college, recommend studying abroad. I was just talking to family about this the other night, and I think it's invaluable. I think if you have that opportunity to go with a group that will take care of you, it will be super safe because your college is going to make every effort that they can for it to be that way, for you to have everything you need. And it's a lot less risky than, like, let's say what I did. Just went alone with no sort of, like, knowledge of who I was going to be there with. I have friends that studied abroad, and you are with other students. So it's very safe, it's very reliable, and it's definitely a very rich experience. And I know this might sound really cliche and maybe kind of corny, but it definitely is always worth it. And that is volunteering and doing work in your community. Because like we said, it doesn't have to be some grandiose experience.
Absolutely.
It's all right in our backyards. Everything we do right here, building that community with the people who live around you, with the people who you work with, and we're all going through the same struggles. You know, we all have the same fears and anxieties. They might look different on the surface, but it really always usually comes down to the same things. And to build that, what's the word for it? For community?
Satsang?
To build or that sangha. Satsang, yeah. Or sangha, or whatever you want to call it. For me, it was a team, or my crews, or...
And on the road, it's a band.
Right.
Yeah.
It comes up in so many different shapes and sizes and forms and words. That's really... That's the biggest support system that you can ever have.
And it's important to be curious, you know, because that's what carries you through a lot of this, even in, during the tough times. Get curious about yourself and the different parts of you you can discover, because we can all look at this world as one big giant downer.
Yeah.
You know, with the flick of a switch, everything can be a pain in the ass. Everybody telling us what to do can be heavy and weighted. And if you get curious about the alternative perceptions of that, you know, I want to recommend a movie by Ram Dass called Cultivating Awareness. And you can get that on YouTube. Cultivating Loving Awareness. And yeah, you can Google that and check it out on YouTube. There's so much out there. If you want any more information, obviously this is what Zooming in the Lens podcast is about, but it's also what the online course is about, which I do with ramdass.org and Love, Serve, Remember. We all get together and we create a satsang for a month. And you have pretty much constant contact. And we do it via Skype with a very small amount of people. And we group us together for like-mindedness. And I'm forming a group right now between 17 to 24-year-olds. So if you're out there and you're listening to this, go to Ramdass. So it's ramdass.org/zooming, ZOOMING. And you can register your name, and we follow up with that by sending you a questionnaire. Helps us get to know you and the sort of satsang, the sort of community that you might flourish in that can help you discuss these sorts of things. And that process goes on way longer after the month if you are curious and you want to keep it going. So Zooming in the Lens course can also be found. You can read all about it at functionalyogaonline.com. I want to thank Kara Evans for joining us again. And I want to thank Lexi Pellegrino for just being willing to come here and teach us all that you've learned in such a small, compact amount of time. I can't wait to see and have you back again when you've done your next adventure.
Me too.
Do you have any last words of advice to anybody else out there that is of any age that is looking to expand themselves? Any words of, let's say, things you've taught me?
Who am I?
Exactly, right? That's a great lesson.
Who am I? Let your freak flag fly.
There you go.
Don't be scared to do something off the wall. I mean, don't, like, go kill somebody, but...
Of course.
To, you know, I don't know. I used to do things in college, like I would wear a bright blue wig to class, and everyone would laugh at me and make fun of me and think I was weird, but... I get really excited when I meet people who aren't afraid to do the weird things. I think it opens your mind to so much that you'll even surprise yourself.
That's right.
My best friend will sometimes put her chair on her kitchen table and eat her dinner on sitting on the table just to do something different.
Yeah.
You know, mix it up. Have fun with it.
Mix it up and let your freak flag fly. Thank you, everybody, for joining Zooming in the Lens. We'll see you again soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And if you already have some business or some activity, it is quite possible that this could be continued to be used then as a vehicle for transmission of spiritual energy. And then it will become empowered. Beautiful thing. There's no predicting how this will change your life, except that it will change your life. And even if some people may not remove themselves, they may stay where they are, and yet it will change. It might not change what you do, but it will fundamentally change how you do what you do. That's always the most important thing, is not what you do, it's how you do it. What is the consciousness that flows into it? Is it the egoic consciousness, or is it the unconditioned consciousness?
Music and editing, special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.